Hey everybody, Max Boltman here alongside Corey Pronman for another episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. We are now just 3 weeks away from the NHL Draft. Corey's got one of my favorite stories of the draft cycle, which is his Scout Confidential piece out now. We've got his attribute rankings and the big draw, one of the best prospect analysts in the industry. Our friend Chris Peters is going to join us, but Corey, I'm so excited that the Scout Confidential is out. It's one of my favorite stories to read through each year because I think it's a really fun look, a different look, I think. It's maybe a more unvarnished look at some of the unfiltered, I should say, look at some of these top prospects.
Right, and that's the intent. So to those who don't know what he means by NHL Draft Confidential is it's an article I write where I basically poll my network of sources in the NHL scouting world, and I ask them pointed questions regarding the top prospects in the draft. You know, we try and get at what these scouts think of the consensus top names in the draft, and you know, whether it's something about their game that we think we want to get more commenting on, where their overall stock is, whether they think it's too high or too low, or certain debates that are interesting, such as who's the best defenseman in the draft, who are the top three players on the NTDP in such a crowded age group. And of course, we had to talk about who would you take at first overall, among several other things we got the scouts to talk about.
So you started with the obvious one, and that's who would you take at the top, Ryder Slefkovský, and it was a pretty much coin flip. I don't know that I went and tallied it, but just anecdotally to my eye, it looked very close to 50-50.
It was a little lean. It was lean right, but it was, lean right, okay. I would say, yeah, it was like 60-65% right.
I'm going to assume none of those were Montreal, but I'm sure that they were very interested as well to see this as it came through. The logic I thought was really interesting where you almost had one person saying, I'm glad that we're not the ones making this decision. And I think that's kind of been, you've seen some of that sentiment more so from Montreal fans, not obviously from the Canadians themselves. But I think that's a really interesting way to put it here. Like it is kind of the dynamic now has shifted to be in that place.
And I feel that way too, honestly. You know, I know I obviously have published my opinions. People know where my opinion is. I have those two, as I said, in a coin flip, but I would lean Slefkovský on a pure hockey perspective. But if I was actually the Montreal Canadiens general manager right now, I would be having some serious sleepless nights right now. And I, you know, you probably could argue if you think it's a coin flip, take the center and the good Canadian boy who's got the exceptional status, and you're probably not going to get fired. Because if you take Slefkovský and it doesn't work out, you might get fired really quickly. So, but I think it's a really fascinating debate. And, you know, I think everybody tends to default to take the center. Just because if it's close, and the reason why I think it's close is partly because there's a positional debate there. I think if both were wingers, it would be different, but they're not. And Wright has certain elements in his game that make him a center, and it makes it more interesting too. You know, it could be as simple as that, but there, you know, there have been years where, you know, we had Taylor Hall versus Tyler Seguin. Would you argue Seguin's better than Hall over the course of his career? Maybe, maybe not. You had Ryan Nugent-Hopkins versus Gabriel Landeskog. Would you argue Nugent Hopkins is still the best player? Maybe, maybe not. But then you obviously have years like Matthews versus Lyon, in other words. It's clear. You have McKinnon and Drouin, very clear. And so, you know, time will tell on this one how it plays out.
Yeah, obviously there's plenty of these we can go through. I won't make you read through all of them. But I thought a couple of the ones that I wanted to hone in on, I thought in particular on the Savoy or Geeky question. You asked scouts to pick. Who would you rather have, Savoy or Geeky, the two Winnipeg kids? I think it was Scout 2 who put it as, and I think you varied these, so I don't know if that even means anything to you when I say Scout 2, but he said, I want to love the idea of Geeky, but when I actually watch the ice, Savoy just accomplishes more. That, I think, is the best summation for how I feel about these two, because you have, at the end of the day, it's really easy to fall in love with Geeky's profile, and you see these clips that reinforce it. You see the skill. You see, you know, him using the size. You see some plays where you go, okay, that's real easy to dream on. But more often than not, when I watched Winnipeg, it was Savoy was the guy, or, you know, one of these other, this is obviously fabulously talented teams, but zooming in on those two, Savoy just popped a little more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Geeky's playoffs didn't really help him either, where he wasn't quite as impactful. And I think there's a real tension. I talk to people around the league. It was 50-50 in the fall between these two guys, and right to the end of the season, it's still 50-50 because you have these tensions of, this smaller guy, probably a winger, but he's more dynamic, much more consistent track record. He can penalty kill. And this is Savoy I'm talking about. And then you have this other guy in Geeky who is the 6'3 center, and he has offense, but it's not the same level as offense. He doesn't have the same two-way ability. It's this really interesting tension between the two of them that is still not resolved. And I know talking to teams in the lead-up to the draft, they're still kind of hashing out which one they prefer, even though they've probably watched that team 20, 30 times throughout the season.
I thought it was interesting, you know, when you had Kamel and Lekaramaki, it seemed like Kamel was kind of there was one executive who was kind of the dissenting opinion, but I thought Kamel seemed like the more popular choice there. But I'm curious, when you were asking these questions, how much did it seem like this was something that these scouts and executives had already run through in draft meetings? Or like, was this the first time some of them were, I mean, obviously they're going to rank these guys, so they're considering them head to head, but like in the way that you're framing it?
It depends on the range of the draft they're picking in. If you're picking in the 20s, you're just probably putting the guys in order. But if you're picking the top 15 or the top 10, those are serious questions you've been debating for months now. Is which, you know, when you're at the U18 World Championships watching both of them, it's like, okay, which one do we want? So I think it would really depend on that.
All right. The Brad Lambert one, and we talked about him a little bit on last week's episode, him going through his own scouting report. Anything surprise you in how kind of the teams came out here? I thought, you know, there was one person who said, I'd take him in the teens. There was one who said, I'd stay away in the top 20. And I think it all came back to the same ultimate kind of themes that we've talked about is, you know, there's this talent, there's these tools, but you want them to kind of figure it out. And one of the people pointed out, boy, in the top 10, top 12, you're scared. You're a little scared talking like that about your pick.
Yeah. And I still think he has a pretty good chance to go in the teens. Even though he's the best skater in the draft, and has a track record of scoring at various points in time. I just, the sentiment I keep getting from teams is that the top 10 is not going to happen. It doesn't mean he's still not going to be a first round pick. I think there's kind of, when I read our Cedar Reader comments about Lambert, I think there is this tendency to connect his case to Atu Ratu's case from last season, just obviously because they're just finished and they both had high stocks and they fell a little bit. But it's different because Ratu's not a good skater and this guy's, Lambert, is an exceptional skater. So for that reason, I still think he will be a first round pick. It's just not going to be at the top part of the draft.
So I've had people ask me too, like, do you think, and these are more so fans, like, do you think this could be a Ratu situation? And the thing I've said to them is, I think it reminds me a little more of the Fabian Lassell situation. Is that a fair, like, analog there?
Fabian Lassell, Cam Fowler would be an analogous situation because also an high-end skater, didn't have a great draft season, fell to 12, 13, I think, and I'm talking about 12 or 13, I forgot the exact spot. Lassell at 20 could be more analogous too. So yeah, I think there's those two kids are a little bit more dynamic.
All right. We talked enough about the defenseman and kind of to know that Korchinski, at least in NHL circles, seems to have pushed up to be kind of the, not quite consensus, but maybe a plurality of opinions as the number three defenseman.
Yeah, he's the betting odds to be the third defenseman picked right now.
But I will say, obviously, a couple of the names we expected to see get votes there, Denton Matejchuk, Pavel Minchukov, both get nods. Scout 3 is on the Lane train, and I am kind of with him a little bit. I don't know that I could go there as number three defenseman in the draft, but when you look at the skating, and I think we'll get to your attributes in a minute, but the brain that he has, I like the boldness from Scout 3 here going with Lane Hutson.
Yeah, I think Lane Hutson is it's a love him or hate him kind of thing. You don't talk to a lot. I haven't talked to many people who are like, I like him, I do it in the third or the fourth round kind of thing. You know, it's I'm in or I'm out. And it's because for the reasons we've all discussed, exceptional stick skills, exceptional hockey sense, but 5'8 guy who's good, not an amazing skater. And we'll see where that one ends up. Sean Behrens went into the second round, though, so not that much different in terms of a profile. I think this guy's better than Sean Behrens. So I could see it going him. I don't know if he's going to be I don't think he'll be a day one guy, but I think he'll be a second round pick. But yeah, very fascinating debate on Lane Hutson.
To me, if I'm one of these teams, especially the teams that have three first rounders, your Buffaloes, your Arizonas, I am using the last one on Lane Hutson if he's there at the end of round one. Because yes, he might, like, the floor for a defenseman this size is almost non-existent.
Well, if you're Arizona, you have like three of them beginning of round two as well. So
Yeah, but I'm not taking the chance. Like, I just think the upside is good enough here that with the way he thinks it, with the way he skates it, he just has this other element. I think you even put this in one of your stories, that he just looks different from the ways that the other defensemen in this class process the game. And I'm taking that swing.
I think it's a very reasonable opinion, and I'm not ruling out him being a very late day one pick, but I think the betting odds are more him being day two.
All right, fair enough. Back to Korchinski and Minchukov. I thought you asked the question, do they defend well enough to be high picks? And I think the slight majority opinion was, yes, they don't defend well, but it's not going to matter because they're both just really good players. There was a guy who I think made the point, Korchinski, or I shouldn't say a guy, a scout who made the point, Korchinski doesn't engage enough physically, an executive who made the point, they're going to frustrate coaches. But there was a couple opinions there that just said, look, if they tilt the ice, they tilt the ice. That's good players.
Right. You know, there isn't – you always want the two-way defensemen, the people who have offense and defend well. It's why David Yurechek and Simon Nemec are going to be top 10 picks. It's because they do both of those things. But I think Korchinski's defense did grow up. People as the season went along, particularly in that deep playoff run that just ended recently for Seattle. So I think those are the tensions there. But there are really good top four defensemen in the NHL who are not great defenders, who don't kill penalties. In an ideal world, you get that player, but we don't live in that ideal world.
The quote that I'm sure popped off the screen to me and many other people was about Leon Bischel. And he says, people are sleeping on this guy, not dissimilar to how they slept on Moritz Seider in his draft year. I don't think he's as good as Seider, but there are rhymes in their games. I'm sure he's talking about, obviously, the size, physicality, skating combo there. How much rhyme? Because to me, when you see that, people's, you know, some alarms are going to start going off in people's heads.
Right. I think I think you kind of see the tension with Bischel there, because I think I used three quotes. Two of them were a little bit more on the negative side. And it's not dissimilar to Seider's season two then in that regard. I kind of see this a little bit. When you have the players who exceed draft expectations like Seider does, is everybody races to tell you about the I told you so's or scouts try to get their name in articles saying how much we love them? You don't hear from the dozens of scouts I talked to who were insiders fans, though, and who thought Detroit reached, and obviously they didn't, but it's interesting in that regard, because there were plenty of scouts to talk to who thought Seider didn't have offense, who thought he was just a big physical mobile guy, he was going to be like a second pair type of defenseman. Obviously, that's not what happened. And it very well could happen with Bischel. I think there are very legitimate concerns on the offense. I think he's a really good skater for his size, but I don't think he's an exceptional skater by any means. There's a path there where he doesn't plays in Lexans again next season and gets 8 points or whatever. Looks really nice and mobile and plays hard, but doesn't wow you. But there's also a path where he might pop a little bit. So time will tell. But I did the article last week on who has most potential in the draft, and I think after the two big defensemen go and you're checking Nemec, I think this guy's got, at least from a pure tool, doesn't mean he had the season, but from a pure tools perspective, this is a guy who has a lot of potential to become an important NHL defenseman.
Well, and here's the thing about Seider is it's not like that was, in hindsight, you can look back and say, yeah, it should have been inevitable. Like, he did improve the hands. The hands were better than people realized, but he also got better with them, right? And his shot has gotten better. Like, this wasn't just a case of, oh, we didn't realize how good a 6'4" mobile defenseman could be. He got better too. And that's where the fact, like you talked last week about Bischel impressing teams at the combine, that's where that would enter the equation for me. Like, if they came away thinking like, this is the kind of kid who's going to put all that work into maximizing these tools, it makes it even kind of more tempting, in my opinion.
Right, inside our season, remember, he didn't get much ice time in the DEL that season.
Yep.
Mannheim was really good. The only time he really got something on the power play was at that U20 tournament there in December, and World Championships didn't get power play time either. So it was a tough to kind of identify his skill. Bischel played U18 hockey this year at the Hlinka. He played U18 last year in Dallas, where he was one of Switzerland's best players there. He played a couple of World Junior games. So you got a little bit more junior, and he played some J20 games in Sweden too. So you got a little bit more idea where his skills actually are relative to his peers. And I think I came away with that. I can see people who watch him and say, hey, there's no offense here at all. I came away from thinking there's a little offense. It's not going to get you all riled up, but there's some offense here, enough to maximize hopefully his other attributes, but time will tell.
And what you're worried about there is it's even strength offense, right? Because if it's not all world offense, then you're probably not going to end up running a power play. But if the offense is even strength offense.
I don't think his biggest advocates think he's going to be on an NHL power play.
Right. So that's what I mean. Like it's then you want to know that it's even strength offense that can come. If, as long as you can be then that 20 to 25 point guy, teams are going to be really happy.
Yeah. And that's why I think he'll be somewhere between in the teens, I guess. Pick between 12 to 20 or something along those lines.
Yeah. Okay, on to the NTDP grouping. You asked the scouts and executives, who is the third best player at the program, with obviously the presumption being Logan Cooley and Cutter Gauthier as the top two. Nazar got two votes, and I think that would probably be the majority opinion, even if you broadened out. But I thought the name that jumped out at me getting a vote was Jimmy Snuggerud. That was not one I necessarily expected to see in that tier, but the scout makes the point he's continued to get better. He's big, skilled, competes, and can score. I think he's scratching the surface. Ultimately, when you do zoom out a bit, you're dreaming a little bit here. But Snuggerud does have kind of the toolkit, the package that maybe can make him a little bit of a surprise pick somewhere earlier in the draft than we expect.
Yeah, I think there are some people I talked to who are not as enamored, but some people who actually do really like this player. He's one of the younger players on the program too. I think he's around a June or July birth date. So whereas Nazar and McGrory are more in the first quarter of the birth year. So you're hoping just like how Snuggerud took a really big step. He was not considered at this level of prospect a year ago. It was through his play this year, working his way up to the top line on the NTDP, that he's kind of elevated his way with his two-way play, his scoring ability, into potentially being a first-round pick. So I think there's hope that you kind of continue that trajectory into college next season. It wouldn't be my betting odds for him to be the third player off the board. It would probably be either Nazar or McGrory. But I think there's enough Jimmy Snuggerud fans out there that I wouldn't be shocked if he went right around the 20 pick, maybe even a little bit higher, but 20 is probably like the over-under I would set.
There's a lot more good stuff in this article. You can read a lot about what scouts think of the Russian players, which is going to be one of the most interesting topics, and a bunch of other really good pointed questions that Corey asked these scouts and executives, and I would certainly encourage you to do that. We're going to pivot now, though, into, Corey, your attribute grades, which is always one of the more interesting things to me, especially if you know as a fan, hey, my team loves guys with great hockey sense. My team loves physically dominant players. This is the article for you. It's going to tell you who to key in on. And I do want to start with those physically dominant players, because it's a few of the names that maybe we don't talk about as consistently on this show at the very top. Jack Sparks and Maverick Lamoureux.
Right. I think probably I would say NHL people would argue that people who talk about prospects online or in podcasts or in articles tend to skew more to the aesthetic talent, to the guys who look pretty, who skate really well, who make the skilled plays, but not to the big physical mobile defenseman who doesn't have the offense. And that's kind of, Maverick Lamoureux is a guy that might still go in the first round of this year's draft, despite having, I think he had 15 points this year in the queue, 20 points. And it's because he is 6'6", 6'7". He skates quite well for his size. He defends well due to the feet, due to the reach. He plays hard. And that's because the distinction between him and a guy like Leon Bischel, as we aforementioned, is I think there's very little offense in this guy's game. I don't know if there's even enough to be like an average-ish puck mover in the NHL, but I think it's probably good enough where it's not terrible that you think he can hold his own, be a third pair, chance at a second. It's why I think he's going to be either a late one or an early two pick.
One of the other things I always look for is who's popping up on multiple of these lists that's not a consensus top player. Yes, Logan Cooley's in here plenty. Yes, you're going to see Shane Wright, Simon Nemitz. But Callie O'Delius is a guy out of your garden who, I don't know where you see him going right now today, Corey, but he ends up number four on your best skaters list. And he ends up kind of at the back of the best hockey sense list, but still number 11. To me, that's a really good combo for a defenseman to have, especially when O'Delius isn't a small guy.
He's about 5'11"-ish, but yeah, he's not tiny. I think that's kind of the issue with O'Delius is I like the player. I like watching the player a lot. You see the tools with the skating. I don't think he's a big time offensive guy, but I liked his offense more with his J20 team than I did with the international team. I thought with Sweden's U18 team, he struggled moving the puck at times. But I thought with his J20 team with your garden, I liked his games a lot there. My question is just, and I think there's a question that's shared by NHL folks, which is why I don't think he'll be a first-round pick, probably more of a second or a third-round pick, is what's his role? Is he good enough offensively to be a power play guy? If not, is he a good enough defender to be a penalty kill guy? And I think he kind of fits in this limbo of he's not that physical, but he's a good skater. He's not that big. He moves the puck, but it's not high-end offense. So I'll be really curious to see how this player pans out.
I was also curious where Matthias Hovland was going to fall on these lists, because he's a guy who just had a big tournament at the U18s for Sweden. He does check in at number 4 on the best shots list, but I kind of wondered if he wouldn't end up in the hockey sense tier. Why didn't he kind of creep up there in terms of the sense?
You could argue him there. I've had him there before. As I kind of watched him over the course of the season, I thought there was a good brain, but I thought his offense would generate a lot through his skill and his hockey sense, not just his sense, and as well having that big shot. So I think this is just a multi-dimensional offensive player. It's not just a smart, clever puck mover, even though I do think it's an important part of his game. I would say, compare him to, say, his teammate, Cali Audelius, he is more offensively dynamic than Audelius is. But that's not what this list is asking. I guess you could make micro-categories like I did with physically dominant players and start creating all these kind of categories.
For sure. And then I guess just last thing on this topic, the list length for your best shots and your best puck skills, shorter than I would say the other categories are. Is that just because it's so hard to be distinguishably that much more skilled and have that much better a shot right now?
That was my conclusion from doing this. I did this like last year. I did the most like within kinds of physicality too. I just felt like it was only a couple of guys. It was like Beniers and Tyler Boucher, and I think I put one or two others in there. But from a pure puck skills perspective, yeah, I only saw a handful of guys that really distinguished themselves. When you were watching them, you thought their skill elevated to a different level in terms of how they're able to beat opponents, how they're able to make unique plays with the puck. A lot of which are Russian players that probably you need to watch in their NHL games and have to really key in on. But yeah, I would agree with your assertion.
All right. A lot of good stuff there. Make sure you go check that out, as well as the Scout Confidential. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Chris Peters.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we are joined now by our good friend Chris Peters of Daily Faceoff to talk about the 2022 NHL Draft. And I want to start off with a simple one, Chris. You have Logan Cooley number 1 on your draft board. Corey has Logan Cooley number 3, but number 1 in his upside rankings. My question is Corey a coward for not taking the full leap and putting Logan Cooley at number 1?
Max, thank you so much for asking that question in that very specific way. And I will say he is. No, I mean, like, honestly, I think I'd love to say that he is, but I think that, you know, he also was bold in putting Juraj Slafkovský number 1. And so I think the difference between us and the difference between the consensus and or among the consensus of whatever else is out there, I think it shows that there really isn't a huge gap among these players. I know that, you know, in Corey and I, when he was on my podcast, we talked about the tiers of those players, and I feel Cooley is in that tier. He has Cooley just outside that tier. So that's where I would say there's, you know, I feel there's a significant difference in how we view Logan Cooley in particular, just in that very specific way. But at the same time, there's not a lot of separation between Juraj Slafkovský and Shane Wright in my mind. I would say that Shane Wright has the best hockey sense of those three. I would say that, you know, Slafkovský obviously has the physical element that is an advantage. And then I would just say that Cooley is kind of has an advantage just about everywhere else for me personally. You know, and so that's where I think that, you know, why I have him there. And I agree completely with Corey that Logan Cooley has the highest ceiling in this draft. And the thing about high ceilings is that there's a lot of risk that they'll never make it. You know, they'll never get to that ceiling. And that's where you have to make that decision with your board. And I think this time I was like, you know, I feel like I will take the risk and put him there just because I think of the three players, I view him as the highest potential player to become a star in the league.
I want to say you were the first kind of the prominent public analysts that I saw this year to go off of Shane Wright. And I know it was never a knock on Wright. You know, you're just kind of responding to what you see there. But we talked about this on a recent episode. Like, I've thought Cooley's like one of the most electric players, obviously, in the draft the whole year, but kept waiting to see some kind of surge in production to feel like, okay, number one player in the class. How much did that weigh into your decision? And, you know, obviously a really good season, but it never exploded on the score sheet necessarily, quite commensurately.
Yeah, you know, I would say that the thing that really changed for me, you know, was just visually watching the games and saying, this is a guy that I know has more in him than he's shown. And we saw it at the World Under 18s last year. And I was, you know, that was one of the greatest performances. I've been to that tournament 8 times, and that was probably one of the most impressive individual performances that I had seen. And then we found out later that he was playing hurt, he was playing sick, you know, like he was dealing with a lot, and his team was so much better with him on the ice. You know, and obviously we saw Connor Bedard emerge and different things, but you know, Shane Wright was my pick to be the MVP of that tournament, even though he missed a couple of games. And so this whole season, I kept watching games and I'm saying, I don't see, like, he impacts the game. It's good. It's consistent. But then you would see little moments where it's like, the expectation was that he would be dominant at this stage of his career, and he wasn't. And I felt like I saw, you know, Cooley take over more games. We saw Slavkovsky do it internationally where he took over games. And it's not to say that Shane Wright didn't take over games. There were instances that he did. I just felt like, I worry that he's plateaued, not necessarily plateaued, you know, fully, but that the ceiling that I saw for him before is lower because of the way that he looked in the games that I watched this season.
With specific, I guess, to Montreal's decision here now, it seems like certainly in the public discourse, it seems like it's a Wright versus Slavkovsky thing. Do you think that, I mean, it sounds like you obviously believe Cooley should be involved in that. How much do you think he is involved in that discussion at this time, I'll say?
I mean, I think he's involved in it because I think that the style that Montreal implemented in the late season, you know, there was a pace to it. There was a flow to it. And I think he's a pace flow kind of player. You know, like that's kind of what I had envisioned. And, you know, you look at, you know, you think anybody's going to tell Martin St. Louis that size matters? You know, like that's the other thing where it's just... You know, I think the style and obviously St. Louis being the head coach, you know, he's watched his son play with Logan Cooley. He's watched, you know, he's seen these guys in the National Team Development Program. He was very much, you know, a fixture at those kind of things when he wasn't coaching. And, you know, so to see Logan Cooley, you know, Ryan is a year older than Logan Cooley, but they were on the same under 18 world championship team. So, you know, I think that, that he should be in that discussion. And I think he is a good fit for what they do. I completely understand, you know, the idea of you've got Suzuki, you could do a 1-2 punch of Suzuki and Wright. And I think that makes a ton of sense. But, you know, I think Cooley for me in particular has the ability to be that, you know, high end number two to Nick Suzuki, potentially the number one eventually. But I could also understand that Montreal is like, hey, you know, yes, size doesn't matter as much, but it still matters enough for us to want to go with a bigger, you know, sturdier player in that slot.
I do think Cooley is in the conversation for Montreal. In discussions of scouts I talked to around the league, it mostly centers around Shane Wright versus Juraj Slavkovsky. Although right before we started recording and after I published the draft confidential piece, I did talk to a scout who thinks Cooley is the best player. So that minority opinion, I do think, is out there and is worth discussing. I do think there are some scouts, other ones I just talked to, who do believe that. So I do think it's most about Wright versus Slavkovsky, but it's a conversation you absolutely have to have just due to how talented Cooley is.
Well, we had the Montreal reporters on here. We talked about, right, like this different element that Slavkovsky brings to kind of what they have. And obviously it's a smaller, I would say, their stars up front are smaller. But I think you could make a good case that Cooley is still a different element. Like, there's some rhyme to how Shane Wright and Nick Suzuki are going to succeed. And Cooley does still bring that different element. You could still be getting a center.
Yeah.
It's still something they don't necessarily have right now.
Right, because Suzuki and Caulfield aren't dynamic skaters. They're really skilled players. Obviously, Caulfield's got that incredible shot, and Suzuki
smart
has tremendous hockey sense. But Cooley, while he's small, he has a pace element to his game that their other stars up front anyway do not have.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I think really one of the things that really was a deciding factor for me with Cooley was just watching kind of how the playoffs shook out, you know, and watching and saying, wow, you know, speeds matters a whole heck of a lot in the NHL right now. And he plays, it's not just that he's fast. He plays the game fast. He processes it fast. He does all these things at high rates of speed that not everybody can do. And that's really where I felt pretty significantly that he makes a huge difference there. He's a huge difference maker in that regard.
Yeah. We're watching this right after Colorado won their game one, and they've got couple of guys on that team who skate okay and seem to make quite a big difference in the game.
Yeah, just a bit.
And certainly, I mean, I think the Rangers were able to have some of their success because of how fast they played the game. We just saw Florida win the President's Trophy. Like, speed could kind of be the next defining, separating thing here in the league.
I feel it's been that way probably for a while. But just like, yeah, I was mentioning Colorado just because, I mean, the way Nathan MacKinnon skates is just ridiculous. And there's when you have that elite, truly elite skating ability, there's just some things you can do that NHL defenders just can't stop.
All right. Well, speaking of speed, one of the things I wanted to get you guys to do today while we have you both is talk about a couple of the players that you're a little more apart on your list. And the first one is a guy who also plays with really good pace and speed, and that's Frank Nazar. Chris, I believe you've got him up at number 7. And Corey, I think he's late teens for you, maybe 17, 18, maybe 19?
Something along those lines, yeah.
19, yeah. So I guess either one of you can start, but I kind of want you to debate each other here on why Nazar should be closer to where you have him than where the other does.
I'd like to hear Corey first on this one.
Well, obviously, Chris is wrong. And I'll explain why. And obviously, Frank's a great player. We just talked about skating. Like you said, he's one of the best skaters in the draft. He plays hard. He attacks the net. So even though he's not the biggest guy, he generates offense in the high percentage areas. And I think a lot of the way he's going to play is going to translate to the NHL. I think he's a good scorer. Like, obviously, his USHL production this season was quite strong. I know Chris was at several of his even his best USHL games. He was Saint for life because he got to be an interim play-by-play guy for the Duke
right.
Fighting Saints.
Yeah, those were good games for him. Yeah.
Yeah. I see good skill and good hockey sense, but I don't think either of those are differentiators for him at the highest level. I don't think he has exceptional hockey sense. I don't think he has exceptional skill. I think it's second power play type. And I don't think, you know, compared to a guy like, say, a Cooley, who was very dynamic in those ways. And given that he's a 5'9", 5'10 center who's other than his skating, I wouldn't say anything about his game is really dynamic. I'm guessing he's going to be somewhere between a second to a third line center, presuming he stays down the middle.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Frank Nazar, who disagreed with you in that piece that Max put together for The Athletic that I read with such great enjoyment. Because I'll tell you what, you know, what separated, and Corey's right, I did actually end up, those were two of his best games of the season against Dubuque, and so I just happened to be there. And that can happen sometimes. And I think that's really moments like that in certain instances throughout his season, especially against the college teams, really stood out to me in that, you know, he is a difference making player in transition. And I feel that the NHL is, you know, continually growing more towards, it's still a league that can be played in small areas, but the transition is becoming very important. I think that, you know, the separating factor for me beyond that Frank is a great skater is that there's an intelligence to it. There's an anticipation element to it where he puts himself in good positions off the rush. He knows what the guys around him are going to be doing, and he just finds a way to put himself in the right spot. I mean, he probably averaged, this is an exaggeration, but, you know, he probably averaged close to a breakaway per game. You know, like just the way that he was able to get behind defenses, and it wasn't just because he was faster than them. It was because he anticipated the stretch pass. He was able to get behind, you know, the defense was slow to react. He was always finding ways through. And I would say that Corey, you know, the fact that there is some of that element where, you know, inside the offensive zone, he wasn't going to be able to dangle a guy like the same way that Logan Cooley was. He wasn't going to be able to even like an Isaac Howard, who played a lot with Nazar this year, two guys that aren't very big.
Sure.
But I think that the competitive element, the speed at which he plays, the speed that he processes the game, I think it's close to Cooley. It's not as good as Cooley. I feel personally that it's close to it. And then I think the hand skills, the release, all those things are enough for him to be an offensive player.
Two-pronged question. Going into the draft in the same years, not now, but when this player was in his draft year and Nazar's in his draft year, who was a better player, him or Nazar or Alex Newhook?
Oh, wow. Well, I was pretty low on Newhook in his draft year. I would say Nazar for me.
Would Newhook be a top 10 player in his draft right now?
Nah, I'd have to look at the draft board again. But yeah, I mean, I'd say he's, to what he's played at the NHL so far, I don't know.
Yeah, so I see a little bit of a rhyme between those two players, and I think Newhook's a great skater. He competes well. There's pretty good offense there. Is it going to be exceptional offense? We'll see, but he you know, has great speed and pace, but he's not the biggest guy. So I see some rhymes there between Newhook and Nazar, who both happen to also be internet favorites going into their drafts.
I just did a Red Wing specific kind of profile on Nays earlier this week on The Athletic. And first of all, Chris, to your point about the breakaways, Nick Four from the program actually said he thinks he averages closer to two breakaways a game.
That's probably true.
So that's perfect that you brought that up. And second, I went through and I was just watching, okay, let me see all of his assists. And I wanted to see the playmaking because it's something when I went there, I saw one of the live games I saw, I really liked it. And then other times it just didn't pop very much for me. And I wanted to see what do this guy's assists look like. And I think I've seen people mention this elsewhere, but a lot of his assists do come on passes that are going right to the heart of the ice or through the center of the ice to get goalies moving, to get to those dangerous areas. I'm curious like how that affects kind of the off, because that, to me, if you can do that at a high level, that can really up you. You're getting pucks to the right parts of the ice.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things I really like about his game is because of his skating, because of the way that he moves, he is able to open lanes and be a little bit more dangerous. And that, you know, it's not just the straight line speed, it's the agility. And I think that that's something that really stands out to me from him, is that he's able to open up ice in certain ways with his quickness and just with quickness. He's very decisive with it, too. Like, he can absolutely force plays, but there are times where... And it helped that he would play with guys like a Howard, who was so good at popping into space and finding that open ice. Because, you know, as Corey and I have mentioned about Isaac Howard, he scored quite a few goals this season, but it's not like he has an elite shot. It was because he was putting himself in good positions, and then he had a guy like Frank Nazar to get him the puck, you know. So that makes a huge difference. That's why Nazar ultimately is ahead of a guy like Howard, who I've loved all season long. But I just thought that Nazar's game has progressed in such a way, and it's because of those things that he does with his playmaking ability. Yeah. And I do think, you know, I think his shot is a little bit, you know, he did have 28 goals this season. I think he's got a pretty good shot. It's not like the fact that he plays with Rutger McGroarty and Cutter Gauthier and all those guys that have high-end shots, you know, it doesn't look as good. But I still think that he's a good shooter and can be a goal scorer at the next level. Maybe not a 30-goal scorer, but obviously I think he could be like a 20-goal guy.
Well, obviously, if he's getting that many breakaways, he would certainly hope.
Yeah, that would help.
He's finishing a few of them, too. Let's move on to the next guy that you guys are a little apart on, and that is the big man out of Sweden, Leon Bischel. Corey's got him in the top 15. Corey, was he up to was it the mock draft? I think he was 13, 15 in your rankings. Bischel, end of the first round for you, Chris. I'm having a little trouble. I lost your page here, and I'm trying to find it. But late 20s, something like that. Does that sound right?
Yeah. He's like 20, I think 27th or so.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is. Okay, 27. So we let Corey go first last time, Chris. I'll let you take the floor on Leon Bischel here.
Yeah, you know, my dog's going nuts, so I apologize if you're getting some of that on the podcast here.
He's
but
a big Bischel fan in the
big
background.
Bischel, well, not as big a Bischel fan actually. I think there are so many tools there, and this is just a matter of, you know, I think this D class has grown on me in a significant way in this class, in this draft year. I there were times where I was really down on it, despite having those top tier guys. But I think that the things that the first time I watched Bischel this year, he was actually one of the first players that I watched in this draft class that from outside of the U.S. that I hadn't seen before. And from that first moment on, I was like, this guy is going to be, he's going to be a thing this year. It's going to be, you know, the size, the smoothness of his game. You know, I think ultimately, I just wonder where the offense is going to come from. He absolutely produced at the U20 level this year. You know, it was harder for him to find that time and space that he needed to operate, to move pucks. But there is a smoothness and a steadiness to his game that I think does translate quite well. I think he's got some good poise. He's physical, obviously. He really came into his own using his size. As the year progressed, he was much harder to play against. And I liked him in those games. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of talent there. I just think it's very difficult for players with his statistical profile to excel. Now, granted, he played professionally in Sweden, played good minutes. You know, I think there's a lot to like about the way he played throughout the year. But, you know, I just wonder if he's going to be more... Is he going to move the puck well enough? Is he going to make plays offensively? Is he going to be able to jump into plays? I don't think he's one-dimensional, but I just don't have as much faith that those types of skills are going to come. And I mean, I think with the way Corey's ranked him, he obviously thinks differently.
You said you hadn't seen him. I mean, I know you had to stay in that one group in Dallas at the U18 World to, you know,
saw him there too, but I mean, like when I started this season's draft, yeah.
Yeah, I think Switzerland was in the other group, so you might have only seen them limited.
Yeah, I didn't see him live there. I only saw him on video for that.
Right. That's right. That's what I was thinking. But it's funny when I hear you make that argument, because I think if we go back, how many years is it? 4 years, and we would flip flop our arguments, where you'd be the bull and I'd be the bear. It would sound a lot like the arguments we had over Keandre Miller, to be quite honest.
Interesting.
Where I was concerned about the offense, but I saw the big, mobile, physical, hard to play against defensemen. And I thought there was some offense, wasn't sure if there was enough. Whereas with Bischel, I kind of see, I agree, the offense is a question, but I think you can go back and watch certain times this year, like when he was at the J20s, or even his U18 World Championships in Dallas, and other times as well. Like his Hlinka was tough, but actually, if you go watch that game they played against Germany, where obviously they was a little bit where they had to touch the puck a little bit more. I thought he showed quite a bit of offense in that game. So I do think there's some, not a lot, but some skill in there to go with the physical traits and the competes. So it's why, you know, whether it's Keandre, whether Eric Chernak, Joel Edmondson, I think this is a guy who has a chance to be that kind of hard to play against top four defenseman.
If the offense doesn't come, I mean, is it like a Scott Mayfield? Like what is it? Let's say that the offense is pretty minimal.
Yeah, it's hard to see this guy not playing. That being said, there's such a thing as guarantees. You know, I thought you could have said the same thing about Kevin Ball, the second round pick by Arizona. He's just so big and mobile and physical. He'll find a way to play if there's no offense. And New Jersey's still kind of waiting for that one right now. So there's never such thing as a perfectly safe pick. Time will tell on Leon, but I think he's shown enough offense that I think he'll make it.
Yeah, and I just on Keandre, who between those two is the better skater though?
Keandre.
Yeah, I think by a fair margin.
I wouldn't say by a fair margin, but by a decentish margin. But Bischel, obviously, I would say, you know, Keandre might have grown since then, but he was around 6'3" to half 6'4" in his draft year. Bischel's closer to 6'5" right now. Yeah, so that's a differential when it comes to skating.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of it in that way, but yeah, I mean, this is the flip-flopped argument. That's a good one. And obviously DeAndre's really coming into his own. So
yeah. Oh,
so I was right. I was right about that one. Just wanted to point
that out. No, you were, but that's why DeAndre looked really good in the playoffs. I mean, and obviously not just the playoffs during the season, but in the playoffs when we were all, you know, keying on the Rangers, he looked outstanding for such a young player. He's going to play big minutes for that team for a long time. And I'm not saying this guy is for sure going to be the next DeAndre, but I think there's some rhymes there that at least makes me think that this guy's got a good chance to be a good player.
Yeah, that gives me more to think about. This is interesting. This is why I like this exercise, Max, because it's you start the, you know, if these are arguments that we normally would have in private, but I like having it in public, and especially with a referee as gracious as you.
Well, I like you having them in public as well. So we'll get on to the last one here. This one, honestly, once you get out of like the top 15, top 20, the gaps are because I know like everyone's closer together. But Corey, you got Nathan Gauthier out of Quebec at number 23. Chris, I believe you have him at number 34. I know at the end of the day, we're talking about like late first, early second. It's not a huge gap, but that's enough of a gap that I'd kind of like to hear where the discrepancy comes from. And we'll go back to starting with Corey this time.
Right. And I had him at 23, but I've debated, honestly, he was a tough one. I've had him higher on my list throughout the season. I debated even putting him higher than 23. When I published that one, I might even still put him higher when it's all said and done. I might make some final tweaks to my list. And, you know, I really like Gauthier. I think, you know, he's I think you know, everyone sees the obvious physical traits, 6'3", right shot center. He plays hard, two-way. In a similar vein to the Bishop debate, I think the question there is the offense. And I would dispute that there is offensive questions with this player. I dispute that because I look at the context in which he played, where he played on, even though they didn't win the QMJHL championship, you can argue the Quebec Ramparts were the best team in the regular season in the QMJHL, a very deep offensive team, you know, some good NHL prospects, some not, but just a lot of really good junior players. So it wasn't, you know, he was on the second power play unit for stretches of time, not in a dissimilar way to Connor Geeky, who people don't seem to be batting an eye to, is similar statistics on a deep offensive team in the WHL for being a top 15 pick. This guy was a point of game last year. I think there is some skill in playmaking. He can score in the hard areas of the ice. So I think there's top, I think he can has a really good chance to be a third line center, and I definitely wouldn't rule out him even being a second line center.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, he is definitely one of those guys that was for a very long time, very much in the first round conversation for me. And at 34, you know, I felt that he was a guy that I've just had a really hard time with this season, just getting a real good feel for, because there are absolutely flashes of, you know, higher end offensive ability. I think that he, you know, he definitely scored at a reasonable level this season. QMJHL stats for a while have sometimes mystified me on certain guys, not just, and sometimes it's just, yeah. Like I think Corey providing the context of Gauthier is so important because, you know, it's the same thing. We have to provide a lot of context for these guys as you get later into this draft, because as you mentioned, Max, there is not a lot of separation. So I would say, you know, Corey having him at 23 at this point to my 34, I don't think there's a lot of gaps between those two players in the end. And then, yeah, if he moves them up, the gap widens, of course, because I'm not updating my board anymore. So I'm done with it. It's
shots
over.
Fired, Corey. Yeah, Chris is telling you stick to your guns.
Yeah, but I think it is good. The thing about what we do is we constantly get more information. And my, you know, Gauthier had a good postseason. He, you know, was an important player for his team. That's valuable information. And then also you got kind of start to hear the way that other people are kind of talking about different things about him. And, you know, I think the size profile is outstanding, his strength, his competitiveness, all those things I like. I think what ended up having him drop in for me is just that, you know, there are quite a few guys, a lot of defensemen moved up in my rankings, a lot of different players that, you know, I just felt like, you know, if this breaks the right way, I just felt they had more upside than Gauthier did. But yeah, I mean, I think absolutely a team that's going to pick him with his size profile, his athleticism, the things that he does well, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see him be a top 20 pick. It wouldn't shock me at all to see that.
I hate to use a comp that is from the same league and the same nationality, because I find it can be lazy sometimes, but when I was thinking of a comp for Gauthier of late, how much different is he from Nicholas Waugh, who's with Vegas?
That's a good one. I think that is a very good one. Yeah, I don't know. I think Waugh is a better, like, I think it's skate. There's this difference in skating between the two. But
you think Waugh is a better skater? So I've always found Waugh's skating to be an issue whenever
it is an issue. I don't know. Since he's gotten in the league, I don't necessarily think that it is an issue. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Corey, there are scouts who don't have a huge problem with Gauthier skating too, though, right?
Right. I actually think, I don't think it's that great, but we've had this discussion before where I think you've liked it in stretches. I've heard people who like it and some people aren't as big on it, but yeah, for me, I don't think it's the calling card of his game.
Well, I almost like the Wah comp better because the comp you have on him when you did your list is Lowry, right? And that's a player who I don't think he's even ever gotten to 30 points in the NHL.
Right. Well, and that's why I had him at 23, which is why I'm debating Gauthier, like, oh, is there more offense? Is there not? As of now, I haven't moved him, but that's part of the debate there.
Yeah.
All right. That, I think, is all we've got time for today on that one. Chris, if you want to stick around for the mailbag, you're obviously welcome to, but...
I mean, I don't know. I don't got anywhere else to be. I mean,
all right. Yeah. Let's keep Chris around for the mailbag today. And we'll go right into that right after this break.
I love it.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we are back with the mailbag, and Chris is going to stick around with us for it, so that'll be great. The first one is going to be a little rhyme to the Nazar conversation, but it's from Patrick, who wants to know if you guys can compare Nazar to Dylan Larkin in their draft years.
So I thought this was an interesting question. Obviously, there are some distinct differences between the two players, particularly on a physicality front. Obviously, Frank Nazar is barely 5'10", and Max can correct me. I think Larkin's like 6'2". Around those lines, 6'2". Okay. So, you know, some differences there in the size, but both are great skaters. They're highly competitive, which was interesting. But what I thought was the most interesting reason why we compare this, as Chris Wells knows, in Dylan Larkin's draft year, he was buried behind a very good first line center. I forgot his name, Jack something.
Was it Jack Eichel? I think it was Jack Eichel.
Yes. And obviously they had that great line of Alex Tuck, Jack Eichel, and Sonny Milano, and Larkin's got buried behind. So his offensive numbers weren't always outstanding. And in this season, Nazar still had pretty good numbers, but he didn't get the first power play opportunities. Those were given always to Logan Cooley.
Yeah, that's 100% right. Like I would say, like, Nazar, despite being the second tier center, the number two center, still way outproduced Larkin in his draft year and against, you know, essentially similar competition. Nazar did a lot of damage against the USHL this year, whereas I thought Cooley was the better player against the colleges and different things like that. But I mean, Nazar held his own in those games as well. But yeah, I think Larkin was kind of viewed as, you know, can you do everything for us while we let Jack go do all the offensive things? And that's basically what Larkin did. And, you know, so I don't see them as, you know, comps in terms of, you know, their playing styles. But it is interesting because, I mean, obviously one of the defining factors of both of them is the skating. And certainly that's where, you know, as Corey mentioned, the size difference is pretty significant in this case, too.
Right. I think expecting Nazar to be the next Larkin is unrealistic, just my personal opinion. But also, they are both going. Also, he's going to Michigan. So another similarity there, too. Want to keep on connecting dots. But I get where this question is coming from. I guess I had Nazar lower on my list, but if he actually popped next season and became a really had like an excellent freshman season, I don't think it would surprise me. I know it definitely wouldn't surprise Chris. So I get where it's coming from, but I do think there are, you know, Larkin, much more physically imposing player overall, I would say, at the same time.
All right. Simon Ducharme wants to know.
And I would say a better, even though Nazar's a great skater, I think Larkin's skating is even just like a different, is a level higher personally.
That's all right, fair. Simon Ducharme wants to know if we can make any parallel between the somewhat disappointing draft season of Nathan MacKinnon before the Memorial Cup and Shane Wright.
So this is a good question, because so I would somewhat dispute that MacKinnon's season was a disappointment, at least in the same degree that Shane's was, because you know Halifax still had a great season, if I recall, 2012, and he had big numbers, and this is a guy who was very young. And he was only a couple of days away from being eligible for the next draft, but still had like, great numbers, great underage season. Because it wasn't, you know, I think he was like fifth or sixth in the league in points per game, so it wasn't outstanding. His teammate, Jonathan Drouin, scored more than him during that season. Drouin also had a better World Juniors than Nathan MacKinnon did, where Drouin was elevated to the top line, and MacKinnon was kind of stuck on like a fourth liner on that team. So I get where this question is coming from. I think he's kind of insinuating like, listen, we have this center, this guy with an amazing track record and Shane Wright. And after that draft, there wasn't really, MacKinnon had like that one or two down seasons in the second or third season, but there wasn't that much of a question afterwards in terms of who was the guy in that draft. MacKinnon has run away with being the guy in that draft. And the question is Wright going to do the same thing? I think there's some small differences in terms of just how dynamic MacKinnon's skill set is relative to Wright. And that I do think his season was better overall. But I get in the sentiment where this question is coming from. And I had Drouin rated over MacKinnon. People love to remind me, so I can remind them again. and I was obviously so very wrong. And, I might be wrong on not having Shane Wright first overall. I've been wrong many times before, and I'll be wrong many times again, and time will tell.
Yes. Trademark Corey Prime and time will tell. I would say to Corey's point, and I think he covered it really well there, but I just say that Nathan MacKinnon's, you know, explosiveness, even as a prospect, was so evident that it was just this, it's like how... I remember, you know, I just thought Drouin reminded me so much of the Patrick Kane. Like, we were so, like, that was right around the same time where Kane was really just starting to take off. And I was like, oh, gosh. I mean, like, the production, it's incredibly, looks like a video game player. I also had Seth Jones ahead of, this was my first year that I did a draft ring. I had Seth Jones won that year just because at that point he had been the best defenseman I had seen in the years that I've been doing it, which wasn't very many years at that point. It was my first official draft ranking. And so, but you learn from that. And I would just say that visually Nathan MacKinnon looked the part at all times. Whereas I think Shane Wright at this season, there have been so many times where I said, I would have liked to have seen more from him.
Oh yeah. And those Halifax teams were so fun to
they
watch.
Awesome.
To me.
Awesome.
And it was, and the season after too, where you had Drouin and Eliers and stuff like that. It was, but yeah, the MacKinnon Drouin Halifax team, that was watching games with popcorn on. That was watching games with a bucket of popcorn type of viewings. Yeah, it was like just his skating, and then you had Drouin's skill and playmaking. It was really fun.
All right. Next one is from Nicholas LaMarche, and he wants to know how the scouts can evaluate the impact of the missing the year for the Ontario kids because it's unprecedented. How can it impact players differently and lead to different? Could it lead to a different progression curve than what scouts are used to expecting? This one's interesting. I was talking about this with some friends the other day because it kind of gets at, does the development happen based on the number of years you're playing, or does that gap in the middle, can it be a gap forever?
I mean, it's hard to say, really. Like the question says, it's unprecedented, so we have no precedent to use it from. The only real precedent you have is players who are injured and miss an entire season. And I would say typically when that happens, if the player's, you know, just is staying in shape relative and his body develops, they usually tend to hit the ground running. But there are times that there are others where it takes some time. It's hard to create a blanket rule for the entire OHL draft class, because you had some OHL players like a Wyatt Johnson, like a Ryan Winterton, who missed the entire season and did not look like they skipped a beat at all this season.
Yeah, they looked better. Yeah, they progressed.
So it's tough to that may apply to some OHL players, but it's hard to say which ones those are.
Yeah, I think Corey's right, and I think the conversations. There are some people that do worry that gap year has forever altered the development arc of some of these players, and that it very well could have. It's very difficult to know. And, you know, I think in the cases of certain players, you know, that it wasn't even that they couldn't play games. They couldn't even get to a rink. You know, they couldn't get to a rink. If there are players of various means as well, where they, you know, some can pay for the personal trainer to come to their house. Some of them can, you know, some of them had, you know, work different benefits that were available to them, you know. But I think, like, you know, specifically to Shane Wright, because I mean, he's the highest profile individual that dealt with this, where he didn't play anywhere last season. Then he ended up playing, in the World Under 18s, and that was it. That, you know, I haven't seen the progression. That's the big fear, is that there's that gap of, you know, he was so good, and he was, you know, physically he has not changed much since his rookie season. He's gained weight, but he hasn't, you know, he was always listed at 6'1", like 185. And now he's at the combine, he was 6'5", 199. So he hasn't physically grown either. So there you have that as a factor as well. So you just have to try to figure out what they all are. And I think we're not going to know for a while, but I know there is a deep fear that this class of OHL and Ontario-based players is at a distinct disadvantage, but there will be some that overcome it. So, you know, and we've already seen it with some of them with the way they played this season.
All right, the next one is about Kaapo Kakko, and what pick in the draft would you give up for him right now? I think they mean in a trade sense, so not where he would go in this draft, but at what point in this draft would you rather trade it for him, sign him, hope a change of scenery can help him reach his potential over whoever you're probably drafting in that spot? I think it's a really good one. It's from Richard Cologne.
Yeah, I don't like. I guess before you can kind of get into what pick, you got to first talk about the player, right? And I know he didn't put up huge numbers this season, but I liked Kaapo Kakko when I watched him this season. This is a guy who up until the very last game of the season where they mysteriously scratched him, I thought was playing an important role on a team that went to the conference finals, and he's still rather young. We've got a lot of guys his age are not in the NHL, not making that kind of impact on a good team. So I quite like this player. Is he going to fulfill the potential of his draft slot? I'd argue probably not, just from what we've seen. I still think a really good long-time top six, maybe even top line four in the NHL, who plays with skill and plays hard. You know, I could see that. So, like, for me, I have that top tier players, the five guys and the three we've mentioned today, the three forwards and the two defensemen, Simon Nemec and David Yerchek. And honestly, once those five guys are gone, I start having that discussion. Maybe still prefer Cutter Gauthier, maybe not, but I think that's right around when you start having that conversation.
Yeah, I probably started at four, honestly. That's just me. I still have a lot of belief in Kakko as a player. I don't, you know, really, both he and Alexis Lafreniere, you know, I don't know that necessarily they've been handled the best, you know, in terms of that. So,
well, that power play is just so good, right?
Right. Where, of course.
You can't fault Gerard Gallant for having such a high functioning power play and saying, you know what, we're going to take Mika Zibanejad off and put Lafreniere on here.
There's no question about that. I mean, like, the thing is that, you know, they arrived at a time when, you know, they were probably expected to be more than they were. And then everybody else was just so much better. And, you know, I mean, nobody expected that year two, Adam Fox would be a Norris Trophy defenseman, and that you'd have, you know, you basically your whole timeline of rebuilding has been accelerated to such a degree where you can't give those guys the big minutes.
Look at the years Chris Kreider has had since they drafted those two.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
yeah. Panarin's obviously been a huge advantage. It keeps getting better. It's just right. Tough.
And that's why I think there's such potential for them to, you know, especially like if Kakko goes to a new place and then he's given that opportunity, he plays with the right players, you know, I think he could really take off.
That's higher than I thought you guys would both say. I mean, at that point, you guys are talking about like the I think, you know, there, obviously there's a New Jersey pick that gets talked about, but the Ottawa pick at seven is another one that gets talked about. And it sounds like you'd both at least entertain the idea of trading that for Kako.
Right. Now that there is an actual like hockey building issue here where you got to pay Kako now this season. Yeah. That's a variable. So I, even though I say I'm pure talent, it would be after the top five, I would probably, if it was, it would be close between him and Cutter Gauthier. So I'd probably just prefer picking Gauthier than having to take in on Kako and pay him. But yeah, I think starting at Ottawa at seven, that was when the conversation would really start for me if I was in that this weird hypothetical scenario.
Producer Chris, our Rangers expert, do you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I'd love to weigh in. Thank you for inviting me on. Yeah, I think you guys are right. I think it's way too early for people to be writing off Kaapo Kakko. I think if you watched how he played in the playoffs, he really found another element to his game, I think, that he hasn't shown so far, which is playing below the hash marks a lot, really controlling the puck behind the net and kind of opening things up for Hedl and Lafreniere to, you know, make their plays. I think they got a lot of the spotlight, you know, as part of that kid line, but he played a really big role in that. I didn't think it was the right move to scratch him in that game six. And, you know, the other factor, I think, in as far as his production was concerned this season, he had wrist surgery. He missed 30 games. He missed, you know, six, seven games before the playoffs started. So he had some injuries throughout this. And I think, I think he did find a way to really be effective below the faceoff circles. And I think he's going to actually surprise a lot of people going into next season.
All right. Next one is from Jordan M, who wants your Memorial Cup power rankings and your pick as MVP. We'll start with Chris for this one.
So sorry, say that again.
Memorial Cup power ranking. So just one through four, how do you think they finish? And then your pick, who's going to be MVP?
Oh, man. I'd say Edmonton one. Edmonton one. I'd say Hamilton two. Then the Q teams three, four. I'd say Shawinigan and then St. John.
Yeah.
My pick for MVP is going to be Mason McTavish.
Even though they're not winning.
You said power rankings. You didn't say who was going to win.
Fair,
so
that's fair.
So I think Hamilton is built, you know, to potentially win this thing. I'd say if Edmonton wins, I'm going to say that it's probably because they got the goaltending. But I think Hamilton has a real opportunity here. I love the way they play. And I love Mason McTavish, who has made me feel bad for ranking him in, you know, I had him in the top 10 last year, but he certainly didn't have number three. And he looks outstanding so far in the postseason.
I would also have Edmonton at one. It's close for me between Hamilton and Shawinigan. So just to be a contrarian, I'm going to say Chris is dead wrong. And I'm going to put Shawinigan at two.
Ooh, and, no, that's fine.
And I'm going to put Hamilton three and St. John at four. The MVP for me will really will matter on whether Dylan Guenther is healthy or not for the tournament.
That's, you know, a good one too,
if he's healthy, he would be my pick for the MVP. If not, I'm going to say Maverick Bork.
Well, I considered doing exactly what Chris did, but I don't want to be repetitive here. And I thought I was going to have to deviate away from two Edmonton picks. So I've just got a lane here where I can pick Edmonton, who I do think is the best team in Canada, and the guy who won their WHL final MVP in Caden Gooley. So I'll lock that one in.
It's a good one, too.
Yeah, we'll have our three different answers.
It's a really good Memorial Cup. There's a lot of it should be a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, last one's from John D. He threw it in as a bonus question. We don't have quite enough time for his actual question, but I do like this one to end on. You win an all-expense-paid vacation anywhere for 1 week. Where do you go? Corey, you first.
Prague.
Ooh.
And I just, my favorite city I've been to when I've been traveling. I think it's an elite European city. I think it has great, great history, but it's a lot of fun stuff to do there. And most importantly, it's affordable.
But it's all expenses paid.
Oh, right. I forgot that part.
But that's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. Disney World, because I have kids and they went once and now they've been asking me every year. So now I gotta go again. See, I used to work at ESPN, which is a great thing for wanting to go to Disney. And now that I don't.
Well, you explain to people why, because I don't think everyone understands why it's great if you work for Disney.
Yeah. So I was under contract. Like, I had a different contract. I wasn't like I didn't have the full, like my whole family could go for free, but I earned free tickets for Disney and discounts and all that stuff. And it was by far the best benefit of any job I've ever had.
Right. Cause I believe the people who are full contracted employees at ESPN, they get the free express passes and whatnot for the whole family.
Well, yeah. Yeah. You don't like, yeah, you don't get like the fast pass like right away, but you get, there are definitely benefits to being there, and just getting in the park for free and having so many discounts is like insane, because otherwise that's why I say, when I say all expenses paid, it's because it would have to take out a second mortgage to afford the trip the next time. So, especially with the way that, flights and hotels look right now. So, but absolutely. That's cause I'm a dad. I'd probably say Disney World. So, my kids could get off my back.
I've been pulling the maybe next year with Allison to go to France for a few years now. So I guess if I got an all expense paid, I think that would probably have to be the answer. So we'll end it on that. Thanks so much, Chris, for coming. It was great to have you on, and
my
we
pleasure.
Appreciate you sticking around. Always good to have you. We will be back next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Prospect Series, and you can subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. It's going to start with a 30-day free trial, and then it's just 99 cents a month after that. You can subscribe to The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months right now when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Take care.